Welcome to Crypto Talk Radio, the podcast for everyday investors like you. Visit us on the web at cryptotalkradio.net. And now, here's your host, Leister.
Thank you for that, Bailey, and welcome everybody out there in Crypto Talk Radio, found at cryptotalkradio.net. A very happy Memorial Day out there. CryptoTalk.fm welcomes you, or welcomes you back, depends on the situation. I have a personal update. I'm recording this actually on Memorial Day. That's why I said happy Memorial Day. You're not going to be able to hear this until the day after, which is okay. I'm recording in advance because the place I'm purchasing was, it's good to go. We're good to go. Green light. I was told by the bank they're wiring money, which to me means we're good to go. It's going to be a scattered week. And so as a result, I'm recording early. Number one, I've already taken care of casual. And I'm now recording crypto. And I also need to finish some packing. I had to create a game plan, which I still haven't finalized of what I'm going to do. I have to get up early tomorrow, go out to the place, do the final walkthrough. We're kind of doing this rather quick because we bumped up the closing date. Then I have to go and actually get the closing, sign the papers, and we're done. I'm told everything is green and golden and done and finished. And that's, I'm holding to this. Now, I don't know for sure. This week, then, I've got to meet a couple of contractors. There's a water contractor. There's an electrician. There's other stuff like I'm getting set up through the home security and that garage. There's all sorts of things that I'm going to have to work on. And then there's the risk that the closing doesn't happen because what happened to the home while this was happening. So we got the inspection. I'm just telling the story just for, you know, entertainment. Do the inspection. The inspector comes back and basically says the garage is leaning, it's hosed. I think it's hosed. I would rather just replace it. I say, okay, here's my counter offer. I think I came back with like 250 grand or some crazy number that was way lower than what they wanted. And I said, fix stuff in the basement and all electrical stuff, and including, you know, pipes and whatever. And I'll take care of everything else, which is roof, garage, you know. And I think it was a fair deal because you're talking, it's got to be at least 80 grand worth of repairs. And you might be wondering, well, why did you buy it? Because when you look at it, they're not urgent things. They're just things that if you do them, the value is going to skyrocket on this. It's the only house on the street that's at least 1.5 stories. It's the only house on the street, far as I can tell, that has a pretty good sized living room. It's the only house on the street that's got 2 bathrooms. I know it's a shocker. It's the only house on the street that has a reasonably taken care of yard and trees in the front yard. Like, it has all these appealing things that I figured, okay, you do these other pieces, although somewhat expensive, it's going to raise the value. They didn't take my offer. I told my guy, all right, cut and run. Where I'm not, I don't have time for that. Ain't anybody got time for that? And so, you know, they come back and they're like, okay, we'll do 260. We're not fixing anything, but we'll do 260. I'm still not happy about it, but it's still a discount over the price. All right, let's do it. But the point is, the inspector had found the garage issue. We get like a week or week and a half out from the closing date. We get notified by the listing agent that the garage door broke at the last minute because they were opening and closing. It was a matter of time. And I'm thinking in my head, if you had just taken my freaking offer, you wouldn't have to worry about this. So they're allegedly getting the door fixed. Well, yesterday as I record this, so I have to do the walkthrough and hopefully it's been fixed to my satisfaction. If it's not, it could jeopardize the close, which causes me to hesitate to do the full move and prepare for it because I don't know what's going to happen. I'm hoping, I want to get the keys in my hand. Problem is, it's almost 2 hours away. So next week, the reason I told you that, next week's going to be scattered as I'm back and forth. There may not be any out-of-cycle updates. I'm going to play it by ear. But I wanted to make sure I at least get my weekly episode out because I owe you guys that much. Cryptocurrency had a couple of run-ups. I wasn't paying close attention, but I noticed a couple of things we're going to talk about. Let's crash course through that right now. Coindesk.com. Zoom out to the month chart. Let's start with Bitcoin. For no clear reason, Bitcoin hit the 70,000 mark, was en route to the 71,000 mark, dipped a little bit. It's now trending upward slightly, a low of 68.2, a high of 70,005, hovering about the 69.5 mark as I record this. And a couple of motivators on the Ethereum side contributed at least partially to the run-ups that we saw. Ethereum, a high of 3,900, just shy of 4,000, a low of 3,800, hovering close to about the 3,900 mark as I record this, on the heels of the approval of Ethereum ETFs. They didn't cause the major pump you might have expected, but they did cause some run-ups in a number of places, most notably the BNB token. But across the board, we are seeing green on the various core coins as Ethereum goes on its run. In addition to Bitcoin, what I saw was some money that was shifting between these. I didn't see new money going in. It seemed like just people were buying into things and buying dips and causing some pressure at points rather than anything more sustained. In other news, cryptocurrency had another instance of what's called a white hat hacker. A white hat hacker is somebody who does hacking because they're trying to expose flaws in contracts or flaws in code or flaws in construct, and they want to bring it to attention, not because they're malicious, but because they want to bring it to attention. You normally should not have white hat hackers being capable of breaching your project, assuming it's been properly audited. However, as we know, many of the garbage tokens that are spinning up are not properly audited, and one such token is called Normie. I had never heard of this crap, but Normie is apparently on the Base chain. Allegedly, there was some hype and shill. I didn't see anything of this. Of course, I'm not on X, so maybe that's where it was. I saw no hint of it. I didn't see anything on CoinMarketCap about it. I didn't see anything on CoinGecko about it. I didn't see anything on DexScreener about it. I saw nothing about this business. It's a blue dude. It looks like the Pepe Frog kind of, but he's got red lips and he's got brown hair and a beard and some glasses. It looks like crap, and apparently people fumbled into it after it did its launch, and then it did a sideways deal. It gets breached, and what happened, and I called this out on Reddit Finance, actually, as a risk. So if they're listening, perhaps they should consider looking at the contract a little closer. Now, they are CERTIC audited. Doesn't guarantee it won't happen. But allegedly what happened is they were able to get access to the contract in such a way that allowed them to print more tokens above and beyond the supply and then sell the excess tokens. So it's kind of, I don't even want to say it's inflation. It's not really inflation, but they basically just printed supply that wasn't supposed to be printed, sold the supply for the ether that was there. So you're almost unbalancing the liquidity pool, in a sense, is what it was. But the interesting message on the blockchain itself. So this all took place on blockchain itself on the Base chain. They sent a message and basically said, look, we'll give you money back, but here's what we need to do. We'll give you 90% of it back. We're going to keep 10% of it, and that's it. However, if you do that, you're going to use this money as well as the money that you still are holding on to. You're going to fair launch a new token, and you're going to pay all those holders back for what happened. So the background story of this, allegedly, is that this launch was perceived as not fair, and that was a trigger for the hacker to do what they were doing, to send a message to the developers, not intending to hurt the holders, but actually to try to make it a fair launch for all holders involved. Because the theory, and I don't have any evidence of this, but the theory is that some of this dev's buddies were able to get in and dump off the project early and make some money. It didn't have the significant pump and dump pattern, so I didn't see anything of that, but that's the theory, that's the story, that's the message going around, is that it was treated as an unfair launch, and as a result, this triggered these people to breach the contract to send a message to the dev to try to make it fair. So the intent is to now relaunch it as a different token, make it fair for all people. Let's assume that that happens, which I don't think it will, but let's assume that that happens. Even if it does, the sentiment's already been harmed to the point that, you know, why would you trust the dev after that, right? Because let's say that everything was done in generally good faith other than the pre-sale, if there was a pre-sale. I'm going off what I'm told. Let's say that that's the case and everything was on the up and up. The truth is, you've jacked people up because you allowed it to be breached, which shows low competence in your ability to maintain a contract that would keep people safe in the future. How do you know that it's not going to be a real hacker? If the dev, and they probably don't listen to the show, but if the dev were ever to hear this, here's the truth. If I were in your position, I would advise you to reach out to said hacker. I would advise you to give a counter offer. The counter offer is this. No, we're not going to do the bug bounty business. What we can do, though, you can retain that as payment for service, as partial payment for services rendered. You return the money that's available that you stole. You do an audit. We'll do a new contract. You agree to audit it and look for bugs, a bug bounty, right? So that's 50% of the bug bounty. You find any issues with the contract until it's clean. Once it's clean, we'll basically give you that same amount, so we'll double it in payment for the secondary services for the new launched contract, and then sell that to your holders to say, this happened, okay? We got caught with our pants down, Vaseline off the side, but this person has the best of intentions, so we're going to partner up with them and use their skills because clearly they got better skills than we do, and we're going to use them to strengthen the second contract so we can assure that this is not going to happen in a real-world situation. Basically, you turn your disadvantage into an advantage. You turn your incompetence into an opportunity. If I were advising them, that's what I would tell them to do. Again, I know they're not listening to me. That's cool. But that's what I would do, and that's what I would advise them to do in the situation because it's the greatest opportunity you can think of. Because that white hat hacker didn't have to do what they're doing. They could have just taken the money and bounced and been like, done. Sorry, son. Here, they're giving at least the opportunity. It's at least an open door. But you flip it on them and say, no bug bounty until we agree. You'll review the next contract, and then I'll give you another bit of it. Because that's enticing to them to say, well, are you willing to do that and make some more money on that? And see what they say. Because what are they going to say? No. If they say no, they say no. Now, if the people behind this contract feel like, okay, well, there's nothing really we can do, okay, that's cool. But if you're holding them hostage to relaunch the contract anyway, I can't imagine they're going to say no because they're telling you to relaunch the contract. So now it's an opportunity to not only relaunch the contract, but do it correctly. And this person gets to get paid and you can sell it to your holders. Now you got to come at it humble. Unlike Cytochain, you got to come at it humble and say, we got caught with our pants down. We fucked up. We didn't do this right. We didn't do right by you. We screwed up. This is on us. We're doing what we can to make sure we do it right the next time. It's going to cost us a little bit of money. We're just going to pay off in the long term. You sell it. And that's what you're supposed to do if you're running like a real business. And of course, they're not. That's why I don't think that they're going to listen. But that's what happened if you're in this normie business. That's why it caused the dump of what it was. I still like the dollar. Donald Trump, presidential candidate and former president, came out in support of Ross Ulbricht. The name may click and you may not be able to place it. Ross Ulbricht was the guy behind Silk Road. Silk Road arguably was partially responsible for the rise of Bitcoin. I'm talking the initial phases, rise of Bitcoin, because it was being traded illicitly on the Silk Road platform before it was shut down. There were other illicit activities happening on Silk Road. But the thing with Silk Road is, okay, this is a thing. This cryptocurrency thing is a thing. This is the only way that we can do these trades. We've got to do something. So then Donald Trump, being who he is, and I told you, he's an opportunist, came out and said, essentially, that he's going to support making Ross Ulbricht free and not having him serve the time that he's currently been, serving. Quote, if you vote for me on day one, I'll commute the sentence of Ross Ulbricht to a sentence of time served. He's already served 11 years. We're going to get him home. So it's not saying that, the sentence is whatever because he's already served. He's already been in prison. And the thing with Ross Ulbricht, he always had said, I put out a platform. I didn't do anything. I put out a platform. That's all I did. And other people used the platform. And it did happen to go for illicit goods, but it wasn't like I was doing any of this stuff. He got sentenced, just so you have a framework to this. He was sentenced to 2 consecutive life sentences and then 40 years on addition on this. And you might wonder, well, why was the sentence so long? The sentence is so long because if you look at the history of our country in the United States, anytime there's money involved, anytime that the government's not getting tax money, and I'm not talking even direct tax evasion, I'm talking if money is moving in any way where there's a risk that the IRS is not going to get paid, they throw the freaking book at you. But if you look at Phil Spector, the musician, he straight up murdered somebody in his home, shot her, was found with the gun. They struggled to convict him. And then when they did, they only gave him 15 years. Casey Anthony, right, essentially killed her daughter. They never proved it, but she essentially killed her daughter. She was driving around with the dead body of her daughter, got off. Okay. The point is, they go light on you, relatively speaking, when it's a female and when it's murder. Contrast that when it's a male and or when money's involved. They will throw the book at you when it's a male and or there's money involved. They go light on you when it's a female and or it's murder involved. Or let's say a sexual assault or something. They go reasonably light on you compared to what they do when it's financial. That's why they threw the book at this guy. And really, his crime is nothing more than creating a platform, putting it out there, and then people happen to use it. The same thing they threw the book at the guy on Napster. The same thing they threw the book at Kazaa. That's what they do. Because in their minds, you're taking tax money away. And so that's the most egregious crime possible. Meanwhile, you got these sex assault victims, and they see the person go to jail for like 8 years. That's the joke of the United States. And the reason that some of us, not all of us, but some of us have been frustrated, frankly, with the current administration and even historical, but the current administration in particular, because there's been no adamant push to go after the worst in our society, but yet they'll spend inordinate amounts of time when it's a financial crime. When it's a shooting, they take the kid to Burger King. When it's this, they give him a slap on the wrist. When some female teacher is sleeping with a student, they let him off a time. That's the reality of our country. And so this is Donald Trump being an opportunist as he is, trying to get in your ear and tell you what you want to hear about the Ross Ulbricht situation. Now, if he's true to his name, right, I'm Donald Trump and I'm going to do that. If he's true to it, okay, that's good. He tried before, but remember, he also said he was going to toss Hillary Clinton in prison the moment he walked in. That didn't happen. So I'm not saying that he's lying. I'm saying he's telling you what you want to hear because he knows that cryptocurrency allegiances is how he's going to get himself into office. But if he does pull it off, I'm going to give him all the credit in the world. That's assuming he's able to beat Joe Biden this time around. And that's an open question because Donald Trump, he's got all these, you know, phony, you know, political things going against him. And there's no guarantee he's even going to be able to get a chance against Joe Biden. The ETFs, the Ethereum ETFs being approved, it's weird seeing that there was not much movement in the price move. But I suspect it's simply fatigue. I think there's fatigue in seeing these things getting approved, and that's cool, but people have been on the sidelines still, not actively jumping in, and I refer to new money, not the existing people. There's not new money flowing back in. They're still on the sidelines because they know the SEC is still out there. The SEC is still threatening. They're threatening all the different exchanges. They're still playing the games, and there's not clear regulatory framework. There was some regulations that passed the House very recently, and that's largely bipartisan. But they haven't been able to make the full traction that either corrals the SEC or puts clear guidelines as to what's legal and what's not. We still don't have clarity with the exchanges in terms of what they're going to allow and what's not. You have the situation with MEXC forcing KYC. We had somebody reach out on YouTube saying they tried to do KYC and it's still pending, so they're freaked out. We had somebody else say that they'll still allow you to withdraw, they're just going to block trades. That contradicts what the email said. The email said, if you have tokens on here by that date, we're going to get them liquidated. So there's unclear messaging is the point. I don't even know what the real answer is. I haven't looked even deeper into it to see what's really the answer. I know that BitGet in particular has all these great features. They block Americans from 1-inch, blocks Americans from different things. Yet other exchanges are like, yep, all happy go. BISC, B-I-S-Q, is out there for peer-to-peer. There's a lack of clarity and a lack of strategy, and there's not a single messaging, which is why I keep saying we're not going to have that full adoption of this business anytime in the lifespans of those listening to the show. And I maintain that. And I think, in my opinion, that that's what's going on at the highest levels. I think what's happening is, I'm talking the highest levels of wealth. I think what's happening is they're sitting on the sidelines kind of wondering what's going on. Donald Trump obviously said you can send cryptocurrency for your donations. He's doing that because it's pandering, right? He knows the game. He's not serious in his big picture. He's just saying during this election, because he didn't do that in the last election. He probably wouldn't do it on any other situation, but he's doing it here. We know what the deal is here. Now, I'm going to wrap up with a couple of follow-ons. And the follow-ons are designed to elaborate on some pieces I gave out of cycles on. First, sidechain. Sidechain, if you're in it listening to the show, I did an out of cycle, did a couple out of cycles. They essentially rug pulled you on PancakeSwap and they essentially rug pulled you on Uniswap. I want to clarify the definition of a rug pull. A rug pull is when the developer makes money available and then makes it not available. At the basic level, that's a rug pull, which means that's what they did. They rug pulled Uniswap, they rug pulled PancakeSwap. They did send a message out, but their messaging sucks, so you may not have seen it. They sent it through X. They likely sent it through Telescam. They probably sent it through Discord. Maybe sent it through Reddit. They probably sent it through YouTube. The point is, they could have published it through the different wallet apps so that you made sure that you got it, and you didn't get it. Since they rug-pulled PancakeSwap, that meant that you had to go through their DEX, the CytoSwap site or the Cyto Pro app, in order to trade it. You can still trade it. That's why I say it's kind of sort of a rug pull, but you have to go to their shit in order to be able to trade. When they rug pulled the Uniswap, the intent, they dropped you more BNB tokens. So there is a small amount of holders on the Ethereum side, and they're trying to get them off of there. Some people did analysis, and they had theory that the intent, the long-term intent, was to better manage the liquidity, centralize everything into one set. I'm going to emphasize, and this is the reason I wanted to say it here, I want to emphasize, I got no problem with the strategy. And I'm repeating this for the people, person on YouTube says he's going to take a victory lap at my expense. I have no problem with strategy. The problem is communication. Their communication sucks. The way they're doing it sucks because they're just doing it. Instead of, if we want you to be on this chain, do an airdrop of those tokens instead of the other one. That's what you should do. Or a better answer is leave those out there for now until you have whatever it is that you're doing ready to go. I just want to see that it's ready and you're doing it at the point you're ready instead of doing it before you're ready and then freaking people out at the time. Because all of the scan tools to this day, you've not gotten them up to date to be able to scan your new blockchain so that the price is more accurate according to that holder count. And if people are trying to get a sense of where to buy the thing, you have not gotten it more widespread. You're forcing them to your shit. And I understand, but that's out. That's crypto bubble. You're not appealing to the people that are out there that would like to buy it, perhaps, but it needs to be on a mainstream something. So in the order of operations that should have made sense, you launch your layer zero. That's fine. You leave Ethereum and BNB out there. You get on mainstream exchanges. Now, I know that's a hard sales pitch, but that's what you do. You get on mainstream exchanges. Your new token, I'm talking the new, brand new token. They went wrong the moment they rebranded Satama V2 into the Cytochain coin, because what they should have done is left Satama V2 as is. I know why they did it, but I'm saying leave it as is. Launch Cytochain coin as a separate coin on the layer zero blockchain from day one, so it's fair. Get on the main exchanges for that coin. Then set up a swap so you can exchange the old for the new if they choose. If they don't choose, leave it out there and tell them it's a community token and it's your problem. And you're not going to fix anything. You're not going to develop anything. If you want to do that, fine. Otherwise, you need to swap it over to this new one. If you'd like to swap it over to the new one, we'll airdrop it to you. You just have to go in and say, airdrop it to me, and then it'll airdrop to you. Do it in a way where you've got the new framework ready to go and then you do the shift. What they're doing is ripping the bandage off three times now and it's confusing people, which is hurting the price. So that's them, right? Now on the other side, Pulse Chain. Pulse Chain is struggling and I don't know fully all of the nuts and bolts. I haven't followed the eco deep, but it's struggling. And I suspect, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that a large part of the reason that it's struggling has to do with the lack of strategy around Richard Hart. He came and he said, you know, this is what it's going to be. This is what we're doing. And he's not followed up with a strong game plan about how to keep the momentum going. No new launches that I've seen. No new anything. No new shiny. The stuff that's out there hasn't caught on. The bromance, whatever it is, didn't seem to work. Nothing has seemed to work. And seeing garbage show up on the Pulse Chain has gotten people a little bit sketchy in the eco. People that were in the ecosystem are kind of nervous now because they were hyped, obviously, on Pulse Chain, right? Leading up to it, this is going to be a thing. This is what we're doing. This is where we're going. It launches. It's a thing. They start the trades. Liquidity's going. Seems to be a something. And then it just stops. There's no further momentum. Well, if there's not going to be any tangible, significant build on that chain, what do you expect is going to happen in the future? In my opinion, and it's only my opinion, I don't think there's very much more time left on this to go before it's going to be dead in the water if something isn't done to change it. I don't know what that something is at this point, but I see strong parallels with what Pulse Chain did But PulseChain's got more traffic than Cytochain. So I'm not attributing the failures of Cytochain to PulseChain, not even close. I'm saying that it's all about momentum and maintaining momentum. It's easy to jump hype, but can you sustain the momentum that you get from the hype? And that's why Cytochain keeps failing, because they'll generate hype and then stave off and fail. PulseChain at least has some traffic still going. It's still got stuff being built. It's still got swaps out there. It still has a framework that has way more traffic than Cytochain could ever dream of. But there are parallels in the failure to maintain a momentum that tells me we're in for a weird roller coaster ride in 2024 in the second half, because I'm not seeing very many token projects that are able to be strong projects. Most of the ones are just hype ones out there, like the Reddick Finance is a good example. We don't know what's going to happen with that. Even now, I can't tell you if it's a scam or not. I have no idea. I'm just rolling the dice to see what happens with some throwaway money, because why not? And then I saw this BlockDag business, and I'm like, geez, you can't block. I'm not even going there. The point is that all I see is hype. All I see are hype articles, paid hype articles, nothing substantive. Everrise is in the trash for whatever reason. Again, one of the most beautiful projects at one time, it's in the trash. Everything's just trash. Everything is just blah. So I don't know what to think, you know. I watch it, but I don't watch it steadily. It's just kind of on occasion I'll check in and see what happens and check news, and that's about it. So if you're looking for more, and I will dedicate an episode, maybe it'll be an out of cycle, I'm not sure, but I will dedicate an episode to try to help some people, because there was some feedback, not to me, but to others around, you know, talking about certain of these cryptocurrencies, specifically Bitcoin. Some people were saying, you know, it'd be nice to hear something different, right, about Bitcoin that we didn't already know, because everybody's saying the same thing about Bitcoin. And I don't talk about Bitcoin heavily because, for the same reason, everything's been said. There's nothing new. But it's an opportunity to lend my voice to Bitcoin in the bigger picture. And I'll spearhead it off of a conversation I had around fiat, because I'm a big fiat fan, always have been, always will be, and budgeting and expenses and, you know, debt and everything else and how it ties together. This home buying process, because you're not going to get to a world in our lifespans where you're buying a house with your cryptocurrency directly. You're always going to have to transfer it to some form of fiat because of the way the process works. And I thought, maybe I'll talk about that. I'll talk about the innards of that. Because I worked in the lending industry, finance, regular finance. I worked in the home buying industry. I worked in the insurance industry. So I have a perspective on why, when I'm so adamant that we're not going to get to that world, perhaps I can use that as an educational episode to talk through those pieces. And I seriously, look, if somebody wants to come at me, I want the smoke. I always do. If you got something to come at, I'm just saying, in our lifespans, I'm not saying never, I'm saying in our lifespans, it's not going to happen. And that might be an opportunity to put a little bit of spin in a different direction other than these garbages that are out there. And hopefully, you know, it's enriching more than what you've heard so far. Because I know a lot of this might be like, oh, this garbage, you know, or why do I care, or something else. Let's do something a little bit more educational. Let's do something a little bit more informational and see where we can go from it. In the meantime and in between time, once again, happy Memorial Day. As you hear this, it's the day after. I understand that. I'm going to be trying to get this thing done. Cross fingers. They're going to just hand me some freaking keys and I'm signing paperwork like crazy. If I see the money come out of the account, I'm going to trust that it's done, but that's one side of the puzzle. If I get the keys and I have to get to the place, and the place, I got some work to do, but as long as it's livable, then I got to eat the drive back over here, get all the rest of my stuff, get set up, get my studio ready to go, and then I'll be back with you guys on the regular circuit as normal. I can guarantee I'll be back on air for the next Tuesday's episode for sure. It's the out of cycles I'm not really sure about, but I do want to do the episode about Bitcoin, cryptocurrency in general, and outside of the bubble thinking, and why you'll hear me frequently say, not in our lifespans will you see Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency overtake fiat. Cash is king, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be that way. It bees like that sometimes, because that's how I control the rhymes.